Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today, I'm here to review the first series of 2026, the Netflix original series, Blue Eye Samurai. Here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. Now, just when it comes to my regular television watching, I'm not a anime diehard fan. I like anime, but for me, anime is more of a mood watch rather than something I watch on the regular. No, I have no issue with people who do watch anime on the regular. That's just kind of, for me, it's more of like, it sounds good right now. An anime. And so I had this mood kick in recently, and I was like, what do I want to watch? And I remembered hearing some really good things about this series from Netflix called Blue Eye Samurai. So I was like, okay, two birds, one stone. Scratch my anime itch and also record something for the show. Perfect. I will say this about Blue Eye Samurai. If you are looking for a straight up anime, like a very standard anime, no, that's not this show. What I mean by that is that animation wise, I wouldn't necessarily call it an anime. I don't know how other people would, if other people would agree with that, but just the look and the style that is used in this series isn't really what I was looking for when it comes to watching an anime. And so, yeah, that I still have that itch. I still have that desire to watch an anime. And it took me about, I don't know, maybe an episode or two to really get used to the animation and even to decide if I liked the animation or not. In the end, I'm glad that I didn't bail on this series. Let me tell you that. It is very good, especially the final few episodes. The series as a whole is very good, but man, you get to that last two episodes, the season finale for season one, especially, like, it is edge of your seat, holding your attention. There are so many moments, especially within the animation, with the animation style, that it just feels so cinematic, which is kind of weird to say about a cartoon, an animated series, and a TV series at that, a streaming series at that, but just so many, like, very artistic cinematic shots that are used, particularly in the season finale, it is very good. It's a very good story, and it brings us to it brings us to a familiar place of wrestling with what it is like living in an honor shame culture, which is something that I can't relate to culturally, because as an American, we don't necessarily live in an honor shame culture. However, I would say that for me particularly, and I would say depending on your religious background as well, that there is something about processing and dealing with the ramifications of living in an honor shame culture, that as somebody who grew up in a more, I don't want to say that I necessarily grew up in like the high control cult like Christianity, but growing up in a form of Christianity that did adhere to things like purity culture, or also held on to things, that had a high value on like appearance, and you know, a lot of your value was brought from like how you presented yourself and how you carried yourself and all this kind of stuff. Like, yeah, there's like a weird connection that I feel to these kinds of movies and TV shows that deal with this topic of honor shame culture, as somebody who has come from a form of Christianity that kind of also used a form of honor and shame as a way to, quote, build disciples. Along with all of that, so broadly, this is about honor shame culture and how that affects the characters. But there's like a very specific way that this is done here that, at least from my watching, from the things I have viewed, I have not seen something like this. And I'm going to be honest, folks, I actually have been kind of putting off doing this episode because if you've seen the show Blue Eye Samurai, you know where this is headed. If you haven't, buckle up, because I'm going to be talking about things in this episode that I feel like you don't normally hear on a Christian podcast network. So we'll see if this one gets me in trouble with the censors or not, but let's dive right into the series now. With all of that groundwork, let's dive into the series here. The Blue Eye Samurai follows a lone swordsman named Mizu, voiced by Maya Erskine, who is most known for her work in the Amazon series Mr. and Mrs. Smith, as Mrs. Smith. The story follows this swordsman named Mizu. Mizu grew up knowing that she was not fully Japanese. Her mother, at different points, had relations with four different white men. And one of these Caucasians is her dad. Now, you would not know that Mizu was half Japanese, half Caucasian, if it wasn't for the fact that she has blue eyes. And based solely on the genetic fact that she came out with blue eyes, she is quite literally demonized in her village. She is called a demon. She is treated as less than just solely because she was born with blue eyes and she's half Japanese and half Caucasian. Mizu grows up, eventually becomes the apprentice to a blind sword maker, and under his tutelage she learns how to forge swords and also how to wield swords as well. She eventually uses these skills to go seek revenge on the four men who could potentially be her dad for essentially bringing her into existence. Yes, folks, this is like Murder Mama Mia. That's what we have here. She doesn't know who her dad is. It could be one of these four guys. So she's going to go kill them now, because this has just brought so much dishonor on her from the moment she was born and opened her eyes to the world. Unfortunately, it doesn't really work out too well for her. And so her mother ends up talking her into doing what a good Japanese girl in the samurai era should do anyway, and that is settle down and get married and start a family. And she does that, and that doesn't really work out for her either. And so, after that falls apart, she decides, you know what, screw it, I'm going back to revenge. And so, all of that part is shown within flashbacks throughout the series. The main actual story of Blue Eye Samurai is that it follows Mizu. She kills one of the guys who could potentially be her dad right off the bat early on in the series, and is then going forward to track down another man who could potentially be her father named Fowler. This Irishman is trying to basically colonized Japan in his own name. He has been working deals and trades and all of this stuff with different Japanese shogun and rulers, so that way he can gain some power and influence, and most importantly, get some guns over there, so that way he can attempt to take over Japan. And this guy could be her dad. For the bulk of the series, it is Mizu trying to track down Fowler. It's very similar to, just to kind of put this into a frame of reference that other people may know, the series kind of works similar to the first two seasons of The Mandalorian, where every episode almost is Mizu shows up in a village. She needs something. She works a deal with somebody that if she goes and does something for this person, they'll give her the information or whatever she needs in order to go to the next place. Rinse and repeat. That's basically the series. It's not repetitive. It sounds repetitive, but it doesn't feel repetitive as you're watching it. It really held my attention. Granted, I also like the first two seasons of The Mandalorian, so maybe that also works in my favor. The only exception is episode six in the series. Episode six is a completely different kind of episode altogether. It's more of a dungeon crawler, essentially. She has tracked down her potential dad to this castle that he's held up in, and she basically has to go through this castle, experiencing different traps, different kinds of soldiers. There's even like crazy monkeys at one point that attack her. It's all these different things as she's just kind of like crawling her way through this castle. It's really good and it has fantastic music. It's kind of like the show had a very specific style and theme for seven of the eight episodes, and then episode six was like, we're just doing something different here. I should have looked if there was like a different director or something, but like even the music, like I said, is very different in this episode. I was working on something on my computer while it was on, and I usually have closed captions on when I'm one of those people who closed caption is usually on while I'm watching TV. And I'm watching something, and I'm working on something on my computer, and I'm hearing the music, and I'm like, hold on a second. And I rewind it, and sure enough, I was like, this sounds like a Metallica song. And sure enough, it was a Japanese metal band cover of For Whom the Bell Tolls, and it was better than the original. I feel like I'm one of those guys who should like Metallica, and it just hasn't quite clicked for me yet. That's the main plot of the series dealing with Mizu trying to get vengeance on her potential dads. There are several intertwining storylines as well. We have Ringo, who is a disabled chef who becomes the apprentice of Mizu. He kind of like forces himself on, well, I shouldn't say it that way because that means something completely different. He basically just keeps following her around and it's like, I'm your disciple now. Thank you. But he's disabled. He was born without hands. So he's learns how to kind of like go through life using tools in a specific way. So that way he can do his, chef work and things like that. There's also Princess Akemi, voiced by the Disney Channel star Brenda Song. She is being, she kind of has that typical story arc of she is being forced to marry so that way her father's empire can continue to grow and, all of that kind of stuff. But she doesn't want to. She wants to marry this shogun who. In a sword fight against Mizu manages to cut off his ponytail, so like he's lost all honor within the samurai ranks as a result of it. We also have Princess Akemi. He doesn't really have too big of a storyline, but it's also worth mentioning. We see a lot of Princess Akemi's her like handler person. His name is Seki and is voiced by, of course, George Takei, because of course George Takei was going to be in here somewhere. And all of these storylines are intertwining. All of the characters kind of connect with each other at different points. And they all do come back to dealing with being in an honor shame culture and how a lot of times that is completely unfair to the individual, how they lose their honor and gain shame through ways that was outside of their control in the first place. Again, Mizu was born with blue eyes. Princess Akemi was born a woman, and so was Mizu. Mizu conceals the fact that she is a woman throughout this whole series. She's wears special sunglasses so you can't tell what color her eyes are, and she also wraps up her chest tightly so that way you can't tell she's a woman. Ringo was born without hands. The Shogun, I can't remember his name right now, but the samurai boy love interest, like, he lost his ponytail. He lost it in a fight and has lost all honor as a result of it. And you just kind of see how people become outsiders beyond their control, essentially. Princess Akemi is treated as property by her father, and she hates that she is essentially just like an item to her dad. Mizu was demonized from birth. Ringo doesn't really have anybody in his life until he starts following Mizu. In all of these cases, these individuals dealing with the shame that the culture has put on their lives didn't ask for it, didn't do anything wrong. They were just brought into existence this way. And in a lot of ways, especially with like Princess Akemi, the system in place at the time was going to immediately treat her as property because of just how they treated women then. The part that might get me in trouble with the censors is how the characters in this series learn to take back their power, take back their identity, while living in a society that has deemed them shameful. And it is through sexuality. So, here we go. Yeah, this is one of those shows where you are going to see cartoon characters having sex, okay? And it's weird. I think it's not my cup of tea. I don't watch these shows for that kind of a stuff. This show is rated MA for everything, just so that we're clear. This is not for children. Do not watch this with children, please. But all of the characters learn to take back their honor and their power through their sexuality, essentially. Ringo is a good example. So Ringo never really felt accepted by anybody because of his disability. Early on in the series, they're in this village where there's like this festival, pagan festival to one of the gods taking place, where the entire village streaks together and then goes skinny dipping together in honor of their village god. And Ringo is intrigued and joins them. And for the first time in his life, he feels just so accepted by everyone around him. He's not being judged or belittled for the fact that he is disabled. Instead, he is welcomed by this community. Princess Akemi, through a series of events that I don't have really time to explain how we get to this point, eventually starts hiding out at a brothel and befriends the women who work there, and learns that for the women, even though they're in this situation, they have learned that their sex gives them power and control over men. And this is something that she eventually uses in a very healthy, good way when she is eventually forced to marry a local lord by her dad. She's forced to marry this guy, and she finds out that this guy has a stutter. Again, something that he was born with and has to hide so that way he doesn't lose all of his honor. And it is through poetry and sex that she is able to help him feel seen, feel valued, and actually help him be able to speak without his stutter. Mizu goes on the longest journey, obviously being the like main character of the show, of she becomes so obsessed with vengeance that she loses her identity completely as a human being. She gets to this point of like, I've always been treated as a demon. I might as well just embrace it. And again, it is through this like bare naked kind of coming back to her roots, forging a new sword moment, and just accepting the fact of beginning, I would say, to accept the fact that she is a woman, she has blue eyes, she's half Japanese, that it starts the healing process of her becoming human again, rather than just treating herself as a killing machine. Now, along with those things, you will also see brief instances in this series depicting forms of kink. There is a brief instance of shibari, which is a Japanese bondage thing. There's some queer sexuality that goes on briefly in one scene, and although it's not constant, there is moments in the series where Mizu is in combat with somebody, different characters, and the intensity of the battle actually, it is implied that it turns her on. And again, just kind of like this like kink kind of depiction in the series that you wouldn't necessarily maybe expect to see, although again, this show is rated MA for everything, so it does make sense that it would get a little kinky at times. Now, this is the actual part where I might get in trouble with the censors a little bit, so just bear with me, folks. When it comes to all of this, taking back your power through sexuality, the depictions of kink and other things in this series, at the end of the day, if you're going to ask me, Brandon, what's your thoughts on all of this? I'm just going to say this. Safe, sane, and consensual. And you know what? It is actually throughout this series safe, sane, and consensual. And especially that third part, consensual, is very important. And so, would I necessarily go streaking through a village with everybody and then go skinny dipping together to go honor one of the village gods? Yeah, you know what? Not really my thing. I'm kind of cool with that. Learning how to like value yourself and take back some of your power through sexuality. Honestly, folks, I kind of get that a little bit. I will not go into great details, but I kind of understand where they're coming from with that. And okay, ready? Even Mizu's like kind of getting turned on by being in like battle. Honestly, I kind of get that too. Like, again, it's not that I'm not one of those guys who goes to the gym and it's like, step on me, muscle mommy. Like, that's not me at all. Okay. But like, I kind of get the whole like seeing it. There's like a power thing there of like when this is a way that people can just, combat, that is, show that they are strong, that they are powerful, that they are capable. I find that attractive. Like that kind of makes sense to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm the screwed up one. No, I probably am actually. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that, okay, maybe how Blue Eye Samurai deals with honor and shame and how people can learn to bring honor and value back to themselves when society has deemed them unworthy and shameful is through sexuality. Maybe you aren't gonna agree with that. And you know what? As great as this series is, you might just want to skip it then because it's very central to this plot. But I think it is something worth talking about. I think it is something that even in, again, I don't necessarily come from like a strictly like cultish high control Christianity, but I have seen and heard stories of other people who come from these kinds of environments. And one of the things that often changes or that they become very comfortable with talking about is their sexuality and their gender identity. And people get comfortable with talking about it in a way that's not like that gross youth pastor saying, "Sex is great, you all. Look at my smoking hot wife." And I like it's not like that, but just like an acceptance of this is who I am as a person. And we all find different ways to find value in our life. I guess I should I just be cliche and say we should find our identity in Jesus? There you go. I said the cheesy thing. Now you all are happy again, or not, depending on your religious background. If you're listening to this, I'm not gonna. I don't pretend. I know I talk about Christianity off and on here on the show, but like, I don't. I know that people who listen to the show don't necessarily go to church or believe in Jesus, and that's fine. Like, this stuff that I talk about isn't necessarily made strictly for Christians, obviously. I just happen to be one and really like this stuff. But I think it's interesting to think about like how we bring honor to ourselves when things about us, the culture at large, may deem to be shameful, may make us outsiders or things like that, and how being put in that position forces us then to find community that accepts us or looks at ways that we may find ourselves and find value in ourselves, even when everyone else is going to say, "You're a loser, you're, a piece of trash, you're just property," that kind of a thing. I need to wrap this up. We're almost out of time. Very quickly, so yeah, I did like Blue Eye Samurai. Great combat all throughout this series. A lot of interesting things to think about, and ends on a cliffhanger because there will be a season two. I don't think I've seen at the recording of this episode a release date for season two, but you can bet on it that I will be covering it here on the show when it does come out. But that is it for me, folks. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review this show wherever you get your podcasts. I don't care where you do, just rate the show wherever that may be. Pass this episode along to a friend and check out the other great shows here on the Anzal Ministries Podcast Network, as long as they don't blacklist me, like Why I Don't Like Kung. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party. Why I Don't Like Systematic Geekology, Page and Pixel. Your Matter Matters and Theology on the Rocks and my sister show, My Seminary Life, where I talk right now I talk about Lent. I'm talking about music and Lent and slowing down for the Lenten season. I'm excited to find my soul again. I lost it. I lost it a while ago, and I'm trying to find my soul and peace of mind again. Soon. Soon and very soon. Check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, a place for faith and pop culture. If you need more of that kind of stuff in your life, I just started a politics show on there because I'm an idiot, I guess. It's called I Don't Know Politics, so you can check that out there as well. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I have delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and served up some wisdom one bite at a time. And kinky wisdom at that.